Well, happy Thursday and welcome to Perspectives on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thank you so much for being at the other end of the radio waves and the telephone lines and the internet connections and all these ways we like to get together electronically nowadays. 414-1234 is the local number here in Tallahassee. If you're long distance, it's 800-926-8809. Email perspectives at WFSU.org. And if you prefer to tweet, we can communicate that way too, at WFSU Perspective. Well, Mike Wood became a deputy sheriff of the Leon County Sheriff's Office way, way back in March of 1983. I'm trying to remember what some of the top songs of that year were. No, that was right the beginning of that big 80s thing with the big hair and the all that sort of stuff. And between 83 and 93, he worked as a uniformed patrol deputy, a school resource deputy, property crimes detective, violent crimes detective. Actually got your start, I believe, Sheriff, wasn't it, back as a reserve?
Yeah, well, I actually started volunteering with the sheriff's office in 1982 before I became a full-time employee in 1983. So I volunteered not quite a year. And during that time, I managed to go to the Law Enforcement Academy and get my certification and convince Sheriff Boone to give me an opportunity.
And up through the ranks there, and captain, and eventually major, and then you worked for a while as undersheriff under the late, great Larry Campbell, that we remember with such great fondness, who left us here back on Christmas Eve. And suddenly you're getting a call, I presume, from Governor Scott and said, hey, you're the guy.
Yeah, it was quite a process. You know, Sheriff Campbell and I had a plan, and it was fairly public that I was coming back to work for him as undersheriff. Actually, that was going to be January 1, and we lost Sheriff Campbell unexpectedly on Christmas Eve. So that plan was somewhat altered. The interim appointment by the governor was Sheriff Rob Swearingen at the time, and he knew the agreement Sheriff Campbell and I had. So I did work for Sheriff Swearingen for a few weeks as undersheriff, but I jokingly tell folks I went from retired to maybe unemployed to undersheriff to sheriff in about a 5-week period. So it was I've heard it put a little bit like drinking from a fire hydrant for a while.
It was the day before Christmas Eve. We got a media advisory from James McQuaig, who's the communications guy at the Leon County Sheriff's Office, announcing that Sheriff Campbell's cancer had returned. And we had seen him in a couple of situations. Well, of course, the horrible situation involving Chris Smith. We'll get into that a little bit, too. But we were all remarking that, my God, Larry does not look good. We kind of felt that the end was near. But, boy, this just hit everybody like a ton of bricks.
It really did. And excuse me. You know, I was in contact with his wife, Michelle, and son, Jack. And even through my 6 months while I was not working, I was in contact with Sheriff Campbell because he was a friend as well. We've been together for 32 years. So I knew the cancer had returned, but I do honestly tell you that it was so aggressive. It caught everybody, including his immediate family, a little bit off guard when it began to accelerate. And I don't want to jump ahead, but I can assure you that losing Chris Smith and going through that very, very emotional and taxing process, that in my mind, and of course I'm not a doctor, but in my mind that played a huge part in Sheriff Campbell's rapid decline.
Yeah. We have an email from Alan that kind of is a good follow-up on that, Sheriff. He wants to know, what are your differences, you know, as far as operational philosophy and running the department as opposed to Sheriff Campbell, and kind of like your top priorities as you get your feet wet in this position and start getting your ducks in a row over there at the SO?
Well, and I'm about the business of doing that, actually, and To address the differences in Sheriff Campbell and I like to think that I'm probably a little more technology-driven, and I've said this in previous interviews, so the sheriff would certainly call me a social worker on occasion because I'm interested in some programs that are preventative in our youth early and catching the youngsters early as opposed to later in the process. You know, it's certainly I'm about arresting bad guys in an aggressive law enforcement, but I do think as a community, and we're part of the community, you know, we have a responsibility to play a role along with the community as it relates to young folks in trying to intercept them before they get to the point that we have to put a pair of handcuffs on somebody and alter their life at that state. So, You know, those are the kinds of things that I'm driven. I have a couple of programs that are afoot. It's probably just a little bit early to talk about it, but I do have some initiatives that we are working on as we speak in that venue. You know, one of the things that Sheriff Campbell and I, you know, I was with him my entire career, and I think what you'll find is I probably have a different perspective on that. The big controversial C word, consolidation, is not on the top of my things to do list. I think that's an initiative the community will have to decide and drive, and that's not for the sheriff to take the point and the lead on. And so as a result of that, I feel like as I continue to build relationship with the chief, Chief DeLeo, who he and I work really, really well together. We've gotten along from day one. His command staff, the majority of those folks are people I grew up in the business with, so I have some level of trust and familiarity with those folks. So I feel like because consolidation is really just not an issue for me, that I will probably give it some leeway and some opportunities to coordinate with the police department that maybe we didn't have in the past.
Well, you mentioned that, the relationship you had with Chief DeLeo, and saw both of you guys hanging out at the recent CEO wellness breakfast and exchanging ideas, and it seemed like you personally as well as professionally were getting along really well. And a lot of folks, unless you've been an old-time Tallahassean, don't realize the level of animosity that used to exist between the Leon County Sheriff's Office and the Tallahassee Police Department back in the days of Eddie Boone and Mel Tucker. My gosh, those guys were at each other's throats sometimes, and it's really changed since then.
You know, it really has, and the thing that I remember about that, because during that time, you know, I was a deputy sheriff on the road working patrol, and I could give you a laundry list of names of my friends over on 7th Avenue that we worked together, and we used to tease, you know, that the guys at the top couldn't seem to find a way to get along, but really where the rubber hits the road, where the guys are out there facing the dangers at night and working and doing the job, we always got along, and we've always been, you know, fairly cooperative with each other. So that's a goal of mine as an administrator, especially as the chief administrator now of the sheriff's office, is to just create that environment, because I do believe that leadership trickles down. I believe how the chief and I collaborate and communicate affects our troops, and it creates a level of cooperation throughout the ranks, and this certainly is a goal of mine. I can't speak for him, but I feel very comfortable saying that he would be in agreement with me on that.
Leon County Sheriff Mike Wood, our guest on Perspectives Today, 414-1234 or 800-926-8809. Let's go to the phones. George awaits. Hey, George.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
Hey, we're doing real good. Good to hear from you, son.
Okay, well, it's good to have the sheriff on, because I wanted to tell him that I really appreciate the job that his deputies do during the Greek Food Festival. I think I'm not sure if his last name is Bill Dawkins or Dawson, who he and I have become pretty good friends because I work in the office during the festival answering phones and such, and he always comes in, we always talk, and they do a very good job with the crowd control, and they do a very good job making sure that everybody's safe.
Well, we really appreciate the input on that, George. And Sheriff, that's one thing that your department does an awful lot of. In fact, it used to be you just called the sheriff's office if you were having a funeral and saying, hey, we need an escort. And I guess we've kind of gotten beyond that. But you're doing an awful lot of traffic control now.
Yeah, we really are. And George, that is Lieutenant Bill Dawkins. And he is a great guy. And he is one of the people I've talked about. He's been with me almost my entire career. We've worked together at many different levels. And he's committed and dedicated, does a good job, and part of the crowd control at the Greek Food Festival. I like to say I contribute to that because I'm usually in the crowd trying to get something to eat because the food out there is fantastic. But as an agency, you know, that's something that we experience a significant increase in is off-duty assignments, whether it's traffic control for construction, events, you know, certainly our football games and all those local things that we've always done. But there's a significant increase. In fact, we have an off-duty coordinator. That's their full-time responsibility. It's a non-sworn. It's a civilian position. But her responsibility is to coordinate and schedule for people that have needs in the community. They have a place called to be sure that they can get folks like Lieutenant Dawkins to go out and do the job.
Well, you'd mentioned the incredible tragedy of Chris Smith a while back. And just last evening, what happened with the two officers out in Ferguson, the entire approach to law enforcement, despite all this push for community policing and the, you know, trying to wrap your hands more, you know, gently around the community that you serve? Is it now come to the point that law enforcement officers almost have to presume that the citizen they're having an interaction with may at any second become a bad guy?
You know, I hope we don't have to presume that, but we do have to put safety first. And sometimes that removes some of the personal touch that the officer may or may not have. You know, we've always felt like we're all the community. We're community servants, and we advocate and we require our deputies to behave in that fashion. But at the same time, I want my deputies to go home to their family every night. So that's a mixture. You know, the recipe there is not all that clear, other than to tell you that, you know, safety first. And certainly I want us to respect the community and treat them just as the fact that we work for them, we do serve them. But in the light of times we're in now, things are just so different than they have been in the past. And even in my career, you know, this law enforcement, the perception of law enforcement and our actions have just changed dramatically over the last 30 years. It's it can be a little bit disconcerting, to be honest with you, but we have good people in this profession. And I think that the community, by and large, supports us. I think it's a loud minority that does not. And so, you know, we just have to continue to do what we think is the right thing and be genuine and move forward and do the best we can.
Yeah, and programs like school resource officers, those sorts of things that allow the patrol officers to get a little bit more up close and personal in a non-adversarial way with folks and just let them know that, hey, well, you know, we're part of the community too. And, you know, you get past the uniform and the gun and the badge and just folks.
You know, that's an interesting comment because I was a school resource deputy back in the late 80s, and we started our school resource program in the early 80s. And our goal was not to be security on a school campus. Our goal was to expose young people to a man or a woman in a uniform with a badge and a gun, sort of to demonstrate that, you know, we're just another person. This is what we do. We're here to help you. We're an advocate for you. We taught classes. We still do. We give classes, you know, on a multitude of things, whether it's anti-drugs, protection, awareness, things of that nature, not, you know, anti-bullying. But at the same time, we were trying to create relationships. Now, we've evolved a little bit into, at some level, they see us as security on campuses now, given the, once again, back to the light of times.
And, right. And that's changed, too. More to come with the Leon County Sheriff Mike Wood right here on Perspectives, 414-1234, 800-926-8809. We'll be right back. We are back on Perspectives. Leon County Sheriff Mike Wood is our guest, and you're invited to join the conversation, too, at 414-1234, 800-926-8809. Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email address. And coming off of talking about school resource officers, and again, kind of the officer-friendly approach to community policing and law enforcement, which is so difficult when officers have to worry about, oh my gosh, you know, am I walking into an armed situation when you're doing a simple traffic stop, for crying out loud? That's crazy. We never had to worry about that before.
You know, it just seems like it's just morphed into this. And we've, you know, I've been posed a question about gun violence in our community. And, you know, there's obviously an increase. I don't have a statistical piece of data to throw at you other than to tell you, you know, we've had conversations similar to, there was a time in our community when an incident that involved a gun was newsworthy, front page worthy, and nowadays it's also ran. It's three pages deep, and it's not that significant because there's such a large increase in that area. So what I would tell you is that, you know, as we approach these things, you know, our training has changed dramatically. We have to take a different approach. And once again, I don't ever want to lose the concept that we are responsible servants to the community. But we do train our deputies differently than we did when Mike Wood started. You know, we do scenario-based training. We try to create as hostile and as real an environment as we can for the deputies to prepare them. But one of the processes in that training is we try to create environments where they get to a point that they stand down. They realize it's not all the way to the the highest level of response. So the deputies can go either way and train and prepare for both, because a circumstance could be heading in a bad direction, suddenly take a turn for the right direction, and you have to de-escalate. We try to train de-escalation, which is, I don't want to say as important, but it is as important, because once again, we're serving the community and we don't want to be overzealous in our execution of whatever the effort is we're making.
Sure, and that's a little bit different from some jurisdictions. And again, everyone has to run their shop, you know, as they see fit for the community or what they think is best. But I'm familiar with a number of organizations that got into the best practice of you set up this scenario, the officer greets the citizen, and if there is even a touch of a possibility that there could be a threat here, you set the ground rules, which is the citizen responds to your commands. If the citizen does not immediately respond to the commands, you escalate, and at some point you respond with overwhelming force.
Sure. And the citizen or the person who you're having the contact with, in the way we train, and as I think the way it should be, they drive the next step. So, you know, depending on the level of cooperation you get, the feedback you get, the body language you read, and we try to train to do all of that, that determines what the deputy does as the circumstance moves forward. One of the things we're doing at the sheriff's office that we haven't done years ago, we actually put applicants through some very, very basic scenarios before they get to the oral board process. So before you come to work for us, we try to give you an opportunity to demonstrate some of your skill set under pressure as it relates to either escalating a circumstance or de-escalating it. And we create the scenarios where we can drive it in either direction we choose. And that's part of the application process to work for the sheriff's office now.
Wow. What do you look for an applicant for your law enforcement agency, Sheriff?
Well, you know, in the application process, of course, everybody has different strengths and weaknesses. So, you know, of course, writing. There's a test. There's an oral exam, and we do prior to each has a pass or fail, so you don't move to the next step until you complete the previous step. But in specifically in the scenarios, we know that these folks, a lot of times they're coming out of college and the academy, and so they haven't been law enforcement officers. So we're really making more judgment on your ability to be confident, your demeanor, maybe your humility, depending on the scenario we set up. So, you know, we're just kind of trying to make a judgment on how comfortable you are under stress. And, you know, we realize, too, that's limited. We can only create a real environment up to a point, and it's not really real. It's the best we can do to recreate an environment, though. So I think it works well for us. It helps us judge and on occasion weed out, you know, some applicants. We've had applicants that were just completely overzealous, and they behave like what you might see a not so good cop on TV behave like. You know, maybe they're emulating behavior, and we're not satisfied with it, so they don't move on.
Oh, like Woodville CSI, huh?
Something to that effect. Yeah, I was trying to come up with a good acronym, but I couldn't.
Technology's changed a lot of this job too, hasn't it?
Oh my goodness, yes, absolutely. You know, I've done some presentations recently. And we did a presentation at Tallahassee Technologies, and it is just amazing, you know, the information that the law enforcement officers have at their fingertips now. That, you know, when I was a deputy sheriff, we did not have that. And I don't know if I'm proud to say, but I can tell you that I've never operated a patrol car with a mobile data computer in that car, and so. You know, my experience as a deputy sheriff will be different than a person coming on today, you know, because of all that information. In our cars now, we have access to check you for wants or warrants. We can check your driver's license. If it's valid, invalid, we can check the history of your driving record. We can determine if the vehicle is yours or not, who it's registered to. And a lot of those databases query one another automatically. So if I run your driver's license, it'll automatically query a criminal check to see if you're wanted anywhere. So there's just a litany of information that we have available. And that's increased safety for the officers and the community because, you know, quite honestly, if an officer can get out of a car to approach a person on a traffic stop, it could be routine. And most of the time, it is routine. But one little piece of information on that computer can change the dynamics of that entire encounter. And it makes the officer safe. Officer may have to take some extra precautions, and then in return, it makes the person in the vehicle being stopped safer, or certainly subject to wherever they drive the scenario.
Yeah, and the ability also, if you do need help, you have backup right on your shoulder.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, I'm not in the deep end of the technology gene pool, so I might speak a little bit beyond my capabilities. But, you know, our GPS locators are, you know, we know where our cars are. Even in a circumstance where we lose contact, verbal contact with a deputy, say on the radio, if for some reason they're deprived of their radio, we know where they are and we get help to that location. So, that's huge. You know, because I can tell you, and, you know, 30 years ago, our radios worked sometimes, and sometimes they didn't. And so, you know, we've lost contact with deputies for assorted reasons, and we've literally had to go out into the zone they work in, the areas they frequent, and look for them.
Well, that was also one of the rationales of the big push by your predecessor, Larry Campbell, for the Unified Dispatch Center. A little bit of teeth and pains there. What's the current situation out there now, Sheriff?
I think it's going in the right direction. There were certainly some growing pains. The technology in and of itself has brought about some growing pains. And, I'm not qualified to speak of the literal breakdowns or fixes, but I can tell you that it's getting a lot of attention internally and externally too. But the fix is – I think the fix is on. I think things are going really, really well. I can tell you that one of the issues out there is, you know, we – quite frankly, and I know people don't like to be overly candid, but I'll take this opportunity. You know, we merged two organizations, two totally different cultures, and that's a tall order. And those folks were asked to leave their what they called home, the sheriff's office and the police department. And it was a very difficult thing to ask them to do and go out there and create a whole new environment with new coworkers that came from different cultures. And so it's been a very, very it's not been a simple process. And the director, Tim Lee, I think he does a good job. I think that the technical bugs we're getting on the correct end of getting past that. I certainly hope so. And, there's an audit that's been done, and I think tomorrow that audit is going to be vetted out in a board meeting, which I'm a member of the board as a result of being appointed sheriff. So I'm pretty comfortable we're going in the right direction.
But I remember times when a simple call for service we're talking about the kind of different approaches historically of the sheriff's office and Tallahassee Police Department, where you would have almost a food fight as, okay, who gets this call? Okay, where is it on the line? Okay, is this my jurisdiction? Is that your jurisdiction? Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's the citizen waiting on the side of the road going, someone like going to come here the next 2 days? It could be a little bit sticky at times.
It could be. And there are occasions still. We don't have, you know, we're not at a perfect place, but we're going in the right direction. And I think that's part of the collaboration and cooperation with Chief DeLeo and myself, Deputy Chief for Seth, my Undersheriff Rob Swearingen. There's just great lines of communication there moving forward. On the consolidated dispatch front, the one thing that Sheriff Campbell, and I credit him, this was certainly, you know, a passion for him, and I totally bought into this, is the emergency call. Because, see, I don't think the citizen's really concerned as to how the officers dress when they have an emergency, as long as they can get somebody. So what we call the priority one calls, regardless of jurisdictional issues, if the police department is in the county for whatever reason, coming to work, going home, any number of things that might, you know, or maybe near the line, that call goes out to whoever is the closest unit. And we have all the mechanisms for the aftermath, the follow-up investigations and all that to occur. And Sheriff Campbell, quite frankly, was very pivotal in that because he had to sign a mutual aid agreement that granted jurisdiction for everybody to do everything. So that physically demonstrated his commitment to the process, and I certainly have no intention of altering that whatsoever.
414-1234, that's the local number for Perspectives. If you'd like to talk to Leon County Sheriff Mike Wood, he's here for the next half hour. It's 800-926-8809, or perspectives at WFSU.org is the email address. A lot of stuff going on at that big old building downtown that might have an impact on law enforcement and your department, Sheriff, when it comes to whether it's guns on campus or firearms open – let's see, what is it? It's concealed carry during emergencies. That's the one we're also looking at right now. So don't mean to throw political stuff at you, but any just general thoughts that you have on any of this stuff?
Well, you know, the carry during a natural disaster, and I may not be articulating it correctly, but you know what I'm talking about. You know, there was some issue with that because it was a little bit open-ended as they tried to accomplish that last year. And from the Sheriff's Association perspective, they weren't completely opposed to it, with the exception of they wanted to narrow the gap of when is the emergency, when is it declared over, at what point in time are you under the umbrella of an emergency for a concealed carry. So I think that they've got the details worked out to a satisfactory place, that the Sheriff's Association is in support of that. We talked a little bit earlier, you know, the guns on campus bill, you know, the Sheriff's Association, and I'm not speaking for them on this. I can tell you that they've not taken a position on this, and the sheriffs individually throughout the state are taking positions, and they're somewhat divided, but every sheriff doesn't have, you know, universities in their community. And I can tell you that, you know, as a parent, I can't ever avoid being that as well. So I'm a father of two daughters, one's at Florida State University and one's at Tallahassee Community College. I bring my professional perspective and my perspective as a father, and I'm not convinced that guns on campus is a good idea.
It's strange how that Strozier Library situation back in December is being used on both sides of the issue of folks saying, "But look, law officers were there within moments and took down the bad guy." You know, without any other shots being fired. Other folks saying, yeah, but if students had been allowed or staff had been allowed to have a concealed on campus, he would have gone down quicker. And who knows, you know?
I certainly can't speculate what would have happened. I think that the Tallahassee Police Department and Florida State University Police Department did a fantastic job. And, you know, as recent as last night, the city commission recognized those heroes for what they did, deservedly so. What I can tell you is that it does create a lot of what ifs if you choose to start the speculation process. And certainly if someone had had a gun and defended everybody there, it could have terminated it quicker. I can't argue that. That very well could have been the case. On the other hand, if there were multiple parties with guns and a gunfight ensued and the police respond, and then, you know, how do you know who's who? And I think it just has a potential for complications. So quite frankly, you know, Tom, I could probably make an argument for either side, but I think that where I stand as a parent and as a sheriff in a community that has three significantly large universities, I think I'm going to hold my ground in that. I'm not comfortable with guns on campus.
Yeah, and that's another good point too. That even though we do have a Florida Sheriff's Association, which can sometimes and sometimes not take positions of advocacy or opposition on different issues, that doesn't mean that individual sheriff's offices have to kind of fall in line behind that umbrella, right?
Correct. That's absolutely correct. And you know, we convene twice a year at the Sheriff's Association, the Sheriff's Conferences, and they communicate their concerns about issues that affect our community statewide. And there are those occasions that there's not agreement. And, of course, I'm very new to this process. I've been to one. But what I did see was where there was not agreement, there was respectful disagreement, and the Sheriff's Association as a whole would not take one position, you know, without the support of the majority of the sheriffs. So this particular topic was fairly divided, and so they leave it to us to be responsible to the communities that we answer to. And certainly as a sheriff of Leon County, my community is different than some of the other 66 counties in this state. So I have to answer to this community as responsibly as I can, and I think I'm taking the best path.
Back to the phones we go. Let's see if we can interconnect with Cliff, who's giving us a ring right now. Hey, Cliff.
Hey, good morning, Tom. This is Cliff Sale.
How you doing, Commissioner?
I'm doing very well. I wanted to offer my congratulations to Sheriff Mike on his appointment, and also commend Governor Scott for making a wise choice to lead our sheriff's department. My point is, regarding the sheriff's budget, it's been a while since I looked at it, I think about 4 years ago. Not just sheriff's budget, the general law enforcement budget between TPD, the LCSO, and the jail operations budget was somewhere around $100 million a year of local property tax money and some other grants, but largely property tax money. The last time I counted, there was about an average of 1,000 inmates every evening housed in the detention facility. And when I was more involved in this subject, I recall that a substantial proportion, maybe up to even 20%, of those housed in the detention facility had some degree of mental health issues. And so I guess my question to Sheriff Wood is, do we have any opportunity to expand cooperation with the mental health providers community, to expand community sanction programs, to get people that are not a danger to the public?
Oh, that's a great question. Commissioner, hang on for just a second. We have to take a quick break, but we want to give you...
That's my question.
Okay, we'll get to that right after the break. Former Leon County Commissioner Cliff Thayil there, and we have current Leon County Sheriff Mike Wood here with us on Perspectives, 414-1234, 800-926-8809. We shall return. Sheriff Mike Wood here with us on Perspectives and responding to a call that we got from former Leon County Commissioner Cliff Thayil. By the way, if you check out his Facebook page, he just put up this. He looks like an old-time sailor about to take off into the wilds of the North Atlantic. It's the most phenomenal picture I've ever seen. But a great, serious question there about the amount of resources available for the jail population to help folks with mental illnesses and the kind of connections that are also available with other resources in the community to help with that. What's the deal on that, Sheriff?
Well, first of all, Commissioner Thayil's pretty in tune. He's maybe been out of office a day or two, but he's very on track with the numbers, the law enforcement / corrections budget community-wide. I don't know TPD's budget, but ours is a little over $60 million, so I'm sure TPD's combined with that is getting us in the $100 million range, I'm sure. With that said, our jail runs about an average of 1,000 inmates a day. That's the general population with folks that are coming in and being released on a daily basis. I don't know if 20% is an accurate assessment of the mental health the inmates we have on mental health issues. It could be higher, quite frankly, and what we have is a mechanism internally at the jail with respect to their privacy and that sort of thing. But inmates that have been identified as mental health capacity issues, we know who they are, but that's not always why they're in jail. Certainly some of their mental issues will drive them to commit a criminal act that lands them in jail. And then what we wind up with is folks in jail that probably should be in a facility to assist them from their mental health perspective rather than the criminal justice system. And that's a difficult task because the sheriff doesn't decide who comes to jail or stays in jail, and I'm not disavowing my responsibility to that. What I can tell you is the Sheriff's Association, for one, is pushing the legislature for some funding for critical incident training, which will help us identify both inside the jail and in the community, because we're currently doing it here with the Tallahassee Police Department, Sheriff's Office, and local law enforcement and our jail. We do what we call CIT training. They're trying to lobby for some funding to expand that, to make it available to more officers and correctional officers and deputies. But secondarily, I hate to say everything comes down to money, but, you know, we have a very good relationship with the public defender's office, the local defense community, for that matter. And as a director of the jail, I was a director of the jail for 3.5 years, so I'm very intimately involved in this. You know, I've been involved on multiple occasions where we're trying to find a place for an inmate, a facility. We have folks that are sentenced, and part of their sentence is a rehab facility, if you will. And then they have to wait on the bed. So they have to stay in jail to wait on a bed to the facility because there's not enough bed. We coordinate regularly with the Appalachian Mental Health Center. We certainly serve them as well as we possibly can, and they do us as well. You know, we have to function together, and I can tell you I can't speak for them, but I do not feel like I would be incorrect in saying that they would lobby for more bed space, more funding as it relates to taking some of the folks in our jail and providing them with the help that would maybe keep them out of our jail. And I think that would be a win for the individual and a win for the community and certainly a win for our agency, because we don't need people in jail that have needs that we cannot facilitate at the level that's appropriate. You know, we certainly have medical, and we have a psychiatrist that coordinates with our mental health patients in the jail. But, you know, the jail is not the place to treat someone with mental illnesses.
No, and your predecessor, Sheriff Campbell, had remarked at one time that as much as 30% of the inmates, by his estimate, and again, it wasn't a scientific survey or assessment by any means, but about one-third were there because of mental health and or substance abuse issues, and he didn't really want them there, but there were no alternatives. Where
well,
you put
and,
them?
And that's it. And, you know, the thing is the mental health issues drive you to substance abuse issues or – you know, which came first, I don't know. It's kind of irrelevant because you get there, and then as a result of that, you commit a criminal act. Well, you know, the officer on the street, the deputy on the street, you know, they're responsible for enforcing the law. You come to the jail, the judge has to look at the criminal act because that's why you're there. And all too often, it's well into the process of your prosecution before people start to delve into how you got there. And then when they identify the mental illness, quite frankly, there's nobody standing in the wings to deal with that or treat that. You know, I sense that if you could interview a prosecutor, you know, from Mr. Meg's office, that they recognize people they've prosecuted that have mental health substance abuse issues that have driven them to this criminal act. Their responsibility is the prosecution. So I hate to think that everything comes down to money, but funding for mental health issues is very, very needed. I don't know that it's all that. What's the word? I've got to choose my words carefully here.
Sure, yeah.
I don't know that it's all that popular or sexy as something for the legislature to pursue, but it's needed. I can tell you that. And I know our local legislative delegation recently we met. Commissioner DeLoge facilitated a meeting, and this was talked about. This was talked about, but now will that result in funding? I'll be a bit of a pessimist. I don't think it will, but if it does, that will be a win.
Well, like mental health court and all that kind of thing. You
right.
got the bucks. We can do it. If
right.
not, boom.
There you go.
Ain't going to happen. Charles is online, too, giving us a call. Hello, Charles. Thanks for giving us a ring.
Hi. I'd just like to say that I think that the interview this morning is very impressive. I've been very impressed by the sheriff's comments and how he's handled the interview. I do have a couple of issues. One, I wanted to take issue with his characterization of the people who distrust law enforcement as being a noisy minority. As a black male, I can say that a pretty solid majority of the black males that I know can sit around and share horror stories about harassment from law enforcement, and times where we've been stopped with the ubiquitous tag light stop, and that turns into harassment and searches and things like that. And these are people that are educated without criminal histories. And when I can say that, the majority of black males that I know can share these stories where we've been degraded. We may be a minority of the population, but a majority of our community wrestles with these issues. A majority of people who want to trust the police and who want to work with the police have also experienced these types of things. So it's not just the criminal element of our community that has suffered. My second point is just that I think law enforcement needs to better define what is punishable by death. I understand that you guys are in the line of fire. It's a very difficult and scary job. You're dealing with some very dangerous people. But I think that a lot of the community is looking at some people are being executed or punished with death on the streets when, you know, they may have mental health issues or they have other things going on that maybe the situation could have been handled differently. But again, I'd like to thank the sheriff. I think it was a great interview.
Thank you very much, Charles. Really appreciate the call and some good points. Sheriff, what do you think?
Well, thank you very much, Charles. And one thing, I don't want to miscommunicate, so I'm not sure, but when I said noisy minority, I'm referring to numerical figures and not the minority community. So I don't know if that's how you perceive that. But anyway, I do like to think that the majority of the community is supportive of law enforcement because we all benefit from good law enforcement. And I say good law enforcement in you know, Charles, I won't tiptoe around it. I'm not a black male, and I probably have not been subjected to experiences that you can tell me about for that very reason. What I can tell you is that I'm a committed law enforcement official, and I have been in this community for many, many years. Not to say that it's never happened, but to say that those are experiences that or fewer than more in my estimation, but I welcome this conversation. That's one of the things that I genuinely want to do, and this is following up on probably the precedent that was set by Sheriff Kimmel. We are the community, and I want to hear from Charles, and I want to hear from anybody that has an experience like this. I want to learn from it. I want to prevent it. I want to make sure that my troops understand this. I want us to see things from that perspective. I can only share this information with someone like Charles, and in that, it's like I talked about training earlier. I can't really experience what it was like to grow up as a young black man in this community. I mean, and I'm not being facetious. I just can't. On the other hand, I feel like I'm a fair, impartial person, and that's the kind of staff that I want to create. And I feel like we have. I think Sheriff Boone and Sheriff Campbell have done a good job in that regard, but we're not perfect. And that's something I've said since day one. I've said this a long time prior to being appointed sheriff. But we don't do everything right. I know that. And so what I want to do is take ownership of everything we do, identify the areas that maybe we're fall short in, and the key there is to not do it twice, whatever that incident might be. You know, as it relates to things punishable by death, you know, I think that's a pretty large discussion. We may not have enough airtime for that. But what I would tell you is that from a law enforcement officer's perspective, you know, first of all, we're not talking about punishment. We're talking about being on the street, dealing with real time circumstances. You have to see what they saw at the time they saw it and how they perceived it, i.e., the law enforcement officer. So the actions they take sometimes result in deadly force, but that's not administering punishment. That's either protecting a citizen or protecting their self. Now, I know that you can debate some of the merits of individual cases, but by and large, you know, the officers that have taken actions that have resulted in deadly force are in an effort to protect their self or protect the community.
Now, when that happens, there is always an internal investigation. Typically, the officer is placed on administrative leave with pay. If warranted,
The grand jury reviews every law enforcement officer shooting in this community, whether it's fatal or not. And there is a thorough investigation. And those investigations, when it's concluded and the grand jury has rendered their finding, they're all public. The information is public. So, you know, there's nothing disingenuous about the process. The thing that you may or may not agree on is it as these investigations occur, you have to see what the officer saw at the time of the incident, you know. And what happens is deputy sheriffs and police officers are out here at night and they're doing a very difficult job and they're risking their life on a regular basis. And so they have sometimes only seconds to make lifelong decisions, and the decision they make within seconds will be investigated, will be documented, will be grand juried, and in some cases litigated for years to come when they had maybe 2 or 3 seconds to make their decision because they felt like it was a life or death circumstance. So I don't think anybody gets a free pass. I don't think anybody should. This is a responsibility that we accept, and I'll stand good for that. And our officers and police officers in this community, they do. But at the same time, you have to see what they saw when they saw it and understand the dynamics that they were surrounded by at that very moment.
The idea of a citizens' oversight board has been mentioned in connection to Tallahassee Police Department, not the sheriff's office. But do those help, not help, muddy the water? What do you think?
Well, I'm not. I've heard different terminologies. I've heard citizens' review. I sense that the grand jury is a citizens' review. They get all the facts and they render a finding. I've had recent discussions about citizen advisory panels. So, I'm giving that some thought in terms of identifying a group of folks from the different areas of the community to meet on a, and this is, once again, I'm speculating here, but it's something I'm thinking about and to meet and perhaps give some direction and feedback, but I don't want to sound like I'm resistant to being reviewed, but we have a very thorough investigative process that is ultimately open to the public when it's complete. We have the grand jury. So the review of day-to-day incidents, I don't find it all that necessary. I don't think it's necessary. And I would tell you that, I could cite multiple instances in my career where we've investigated deputy sheriffs who committed criminal acts and we've arrested them. And that's a sad statement of truth, but it is the truth. But I think it demonstrates that we want to serve our community and we want our deputies to be community servants and stand-up people that abide by the law like we require you to.
Yeah, a good point, because it's so often perceived on the part of the public that, well, that thin blue line, or in this case, green line,
yeah.
I guess, in the sheriff's office, that it always they close ranks, they protect their own, that things are being pushed under the carpet, and a cop will never snitch on another cop.
Yeah, and I understand that perception, and I won't say that it hasn't existed in certain environments. But what I would tell you is that if you look at the history of the sheriff's office, and I can't bring them up by name, but there are a multitude of incidents that have occurred during my own career where we've had officers or deputies that got out of line and were held accountable. Some were, in fact, arrested. Others fired. But when they committed a criminal act, they were held accountable.
Okay. Well, only a few minutes left to go. Couldn't let you out here without asking, you gonna run?
Yes, I am going to run, Tom. But what I would tell you is, and I mean this so sincerely, I haven't filed and all that will occur in due time. But this was an unexpected appointment and it certainly is an opportunity that I cherish. It's also a responsibility. And, I'm filling some big shoes, and you know that, and this community knows that. Eddie Boone started this process, he and Sheriff Campbell, and Sheriff Campbell took it and went forward with it. And I'm proud to say that Sheriff Campbell was prepared to hand off to me just as Eddie Boone did to him. So I realized the magnitude of the responsibility that I've been entrusted with. And so I'm going to put the political process a little bit on the back burner and try to be the sheriff for just a little while. But in the vein of full disclosure, I do intend to run for sheriff.
Well, you're going to have a lot on your plate twixt now and then, even with folks already filing. We got, my gosh, Walt McNeil and Strickland and Tommy Mills is apparently going to go for it again. And gee whiz, that field's getting kind of big there.
It is. And you know what? I'm absolutely, I think the community will decide when the time comes. And I'm not in control of who decides to file or not. And, all of those names that you just rattled off are folks that I've known for many, many years and don't have one ounce of adversarial relationship with any of those guys. They feel like that their opportunity is here, and I feel exactly the same way. So, while I'm doing the business or running the sheriff's office, I'll figure out the politics.
Leon County Sheriff Mike Wood, thanks for coming on, Mike. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much,
Tom. Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Technical assistance by Taylor Cox, our guy with the buttons and the switches. Lydell Rawls handling our interconnects, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Hey, next Thursday we'll get a preview of Tallahassee's 2015 Tech Expo, and that's going to include a look at how the tech sector is kind of slowly but steadily refocusing the capital area's economy. That's coming up next week on Perspectives. We'll talk then.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.